Heidi, oh my gosh. That was like the greatest introduction I've ever gotten. Oh my gosh. Oh, you're unbelievable. Hi, everyone. Sorry, takes me a minute to settle in. And I have a sassy new wheelchair that you're probably noticing. It's called Jazzy, I'm serious. And it was a gift from some sweet friends, and this is only my second time to use it. So if I do fly off the stage tonight, please catch me. Okay, before we go any further, let's chat. You probably do not know Catherine Wolf, but you no doubt know the only man in the room, Tommy. Tommy Weezy, where are y'all? Catherine was on Tommy's podcast, so that is my Richmond claim to fame. Thank you very much. And I made it. I was on Tommy's podcast. So if you haven't listened, look it up. It's a good one. Anyway, what a blessing to be in Richmond. I mean, the world is small. All the connections in this room just touch my heart so much. It's mind-bending. It's such a good thing, and so weird and so wonderful. So thank y'all for letting me be here and share with you tonight. I'm humbled and grateful to ever share with anybody who will listen. So thank you, and never take it for granted that you are here and that I am here and that we get to have these special few minutes together. It's a profound blessing. So with that said, let me just say this. I am the one in this physical wheelchair. You saw it as I came on stage. And yet, I like to make a sort of provocative statement that we all have invisible wheelchairs. Every single one of us. We're all disabled, I believe. Now, I know that sounds a little wild maybe to you, or maybe not. Maybe you're really in touch with your own stuff. But the reality is we've all got stuff. You know, I've got this physical wheelchair and all these disabilities, but that's only tip of the iceberg. I have all kinds of stuff happening inside of my heart, in my head, that you don't know about. And the same is true for all of us. And the invisible wheelchairs that abound in terms of all the things people cannot easily see that are going on. It's horrible. It's isolating and so lonely. And as Anne talked about moments ago, from depression and anxiety to all kinds of just deep issues and sadnesses and hurt. You know, in some ways I feel a little like I got a pass. You know, no one sees me in the grocery store and is like, her life looks easy and she's doing awesome and it's perfect. People are like, what happened? Like, whoa, like her face is paralyzed. You can't really hide that one, even if I'm not in a wheelchair. And it's, it's a lot. But since we've all got them, I think the Lord eventually allowed me to see something kind of cool that I want to share with you. So I have this physical wheelchair. Here it is. Maybe you have invisible wheelchairs, probably, because we all do. But the reality is, probably a few years after my stroke, and I'll share about the stroke in a moment, people used to say, Catherine is wheelchair bound. You probably heard that expression, wheelchair bound. And it just never settled with me. And I realized it's because I'm not wheelchair bound. And that has nothing to do with the fact that I can physically stand up still. But what I mean is that the wheelchair is not holding me back. The wheelchair is not binding me. It's not a limitation on my life. The wheelchair is actually moving me forward. If I have eyes to see it that way, with that redefinition, which is what I believe we have to do, people, to cope in this world. We have to redefine everything to survive anything. And for me, I have woken up to the reality that this realtor actually, and look, it's sassy and new tonight, so it's pretty to tell you that it gets me where I want to go. It brought me onto the States tonight. I'm not wheelchair bound, I'm wheelchair free. And so are you if you have eyes to see it that way. Now, I believe we all have wheelchairs. And I think we all also play the what if game. Do you know this game, the what if game? What if I would have done this? What if I would have done that? What if I would have caught this sooner? What if I would have married this guy? What if I would have had this kid? What if this? What if that? Blah, blah, blah. We go around and around on the what if loop, don't we? I do. I have many times in life, and not just with this, been paralyzed by the what if loop of what if this would have been different in my life and those rotating doors. And I want off of the what if loop. I don't want to live that way. And I realized that the escape hatch off of the what if loop is hope, because hope allows us to live our actual life. It puts to bed all the lives that we don't have and gently says, this is it. This is your actual real life. Live this one and live it really well. Don't look back. Like, lean in hard to the story God is writing through your life. I'm a big believer in, yes, there is pain in our stories, my goodness, yes. But can we keep looking and look past the pain? Can we see in our stories an ability to not deny what we're going through, but to see there is more? There is more to the story than just pain. Pain does not get the final word in our stories. Now, I think what we have to do in our hard stories is begin to radically accept them. I think that is the only way there's ever any peace to be found and joy eventually one day, is we radically accept the life that we actually have. I think I forgot to say this, and I don't want you to miss this, that the question is not what if. The question that I think needs to be asked is what is actually in the story. And I feel like we're obsessed with the what ifs of our lives instead of saying, what is here? What is here right now? What is God doing through my life? And for me, one of the ways I've been able to cope is I recognize I'm going to radically accept my life by doing this. And sorry, I have to put on my trusty readers because now I'm older. But what's so cool is this sassy wheelchair has a cup holder, so it's the perfect place for it. So I wrote these words, and I'm going to read them to you from Treasures. Okay. Friends, the first step in accepting my circumstances was to allow those circumstances to bewilder my mind and break my heart. There is a time for learning lessons, yes. But first, there is a time for complete disbelief. Friends, allow yourself to feel the shock and the sickness and the sorrow and the hurt. I promise you won't stay there, but you must start there. And it gives me chills as I read it even, because I just have seen the healing in that. I've seen me letting my heart be broken and then being able to begin to put some pieces back together. With that said, I'm going to share my story in just a nutshell with you. And as I share it, I have to thank you. Neuroscience continues to research and reveal that when we tell our stories to empathetic listeners, it changes how we feel about our story. Did you get that? So we tell our story and we feel differently about our story. And I've been doing this a whole lot of places. So I think there's a good amount of empathetic listeners in this room tonight. So thank you. Thank you for letting me share, because I think a huge part of my healing has been sharing with other people and processing out loud the goodness of God in this story. I went to a little Baptist college in Birmingham, Alabama, called Samford University, and met my husband as an 18-year-old girl. He was 18 as well. We married after college, and we moved to California for this adventure. He was going to Pepperdine Law School at the time, and we were living this crazy, fun life full of wild, fun adventures, and it was close to perfect. We had an unexpected but right-on-time baby, James Thompson Wolf. Those are happy tears. And could have gone either way. They were happy. And when that sweet little baby was 6 months and 5 days old, I, as a newly 26-year-old girl with no medical history, no family history, no prior symptoms, absolutely nothing, very, very nearly died of a rupture in my brainstem that caused a massive stroke. What I had was called an AVM, an arterial venous malformation, which, I mean, it was horrific, and on my brainstem, which is the worst location for it. So when it ruptured, it caused the stroke, and that is actually a picture of my brain scan from the emergency room. And essentially, all the doctors on call, except one, were going to let me die in the waiting room because it was so beyond hope. When blood hits your brainstem, it's pretty much unsurvivable. And a sweet, interested, kind surgeon saw my husband, my 26-year-old husband, holding my six-month-old baby, and said, I need to go back to my office for a moment, and went back to his office. And he is not a believer, and yet he describes it as he could not get the image of the baby, of the husband, of me on the table out of his head. And he decided, he's like, I have to try to save her. And I know that was the Holy Spirit. And he would scrub in, and he told Jay right before he went into surgery, she will likely not live, and you need to know that. You need to prepare that she will die tonight. And he just kind of stood there shocked, and Dr. Gonzalez took me into brain surgery. And from there, for the next 16 hours, they would operate. And this is all hearsay. I was in a coma. But I would bleed out on the table 5 times. And they would fill me up with blood and keep going. And in their words, she just kept not dying. That's funny, right? She just kept not dying. And I came out of surgery, and they had no idea what we were working with. And Dr. Gonzalez immediately told my family, she is alive, she did live, but there will be tremendous deficits, because he'd known that he had had to either sever or deeply damage multiple intracranial nerves. That's why my face is paralyzed, is because he cut that nerve, and that's why I can't walk or balance, because he actually also removed a portion of my brain, actually. He had to remove a portion that controls your entire ability to balance. And he had to sever swallowing nerves, which you'll hear about in a moment, and a number of others. So he knew that if I survived the night, which was still a question at that point, that there would be some deep wounding that had happened. but I'd be alive, so it would be worth it to be wounded, I think. And I did make it through the night and did live and spent nearly 2 years in rehabs and hospitals, relearning to eat, speak, walk, swallow, and it was unbelievably horrible, to be honest. I don't have words. It was the darkest, most horrific season of my life. Of course it was. And yet there was this shred of hope that I wanted to deny that I couldn't. There was a deep sense that God is with me and I cannot. Where would I go? You know, I wanted to deny my faith, but it was too real, too tangible in those moments. It's like, what am I going to do? Not believe this deep comforter and truth is here? And now, in hindsight, I just see the hands of the Lord all over it. But in those early, early days, I felt like, yes, this is terrible and painful for me, yes. But having to watch other people care for my baby and the months going by with little James being cared for by other friends and family, that was horrific. I think we have a picture of my first Mother's Day, and I have no memory of that day. Sweet Jay brought little James in to see me, and you know, that is just straight up sad. And I like to say whenever I can to rooms like this one with many Christian women or men gathered that there is no amount of healing and no amount of second chances and redemption that is ever going to give me my first Mother's Day back with my baby. I will not remember it for the rest of my life, and that is just sad. And there are things that are just sad. Just hard. And there is lifetime sorrow, I believe. You can have a lifelong sorrow that lingers. Even in the most amazing stories, there can still be pain. I mean, I'm really tender to that now because my baby is about to go to college. He's actually going to Stanford, where I went. And yay! And there is so much joy. There is so much joy in a very sad story. And there's a shred of pain in watching him grow and leave because I didn't get, basically from the time he was 6 months old to nearly 3 and a half, I couldn't really take care of him. And it's just awful and sad. And I love the notion that we can live with sadness and sorrow because one day it will not be so. One day there will be no more tears and no more crying, and that is not today. And somebody lied to somebody that said full redemption comes this side of heaven. No, it doesn't. All will be made well one day, and that's not today. We live in a fallen world. It's almost ridiculous to like logically map that out. No, this place is broken. Heaven won't be. That's when everything will be restored. And speaking of some major redemption, we have another picture of another hospital with a baby because I went on to have a second biological child, John Nestor Wolf. Little John was born 7 years after the stroke. He's 10 years old now and is really hard. Being a disabled mommy with him, but it's a deep joy. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And it's been the gift of my life to have those guys, and yet it's been hard. I know you probably thought, like, she's 22, but no, I'm 44, and so maybe you thought I was 34. Maybe that's better. No, I'm not 22, but no, I'm in my 40s, and for my 40th birthday, My husband had planned for us to fly back to Los Angeles where I had the stroke, and friends from all over the country were flying in for this big birthday party. It was really special. Both my kids were there. My husband gave me that beautiful blue dress that I loved right before. We have this professional photographer there, and it's going to be so amazing. So much healing. My neurosurgeon came. It's just incredible. And I just knew that when I get the photograph back from the professional photographer of that night, I'm just going to be like shook. It's going to be so beautiful and special. And I can't believe this. And I literally open the file of images and I just stare. And I'm like, oh my word. I didn't realize. Does everyone else like think this is all like this sweet, sad, pitiful little case and had to like come to my birthday party and I'm in a wheelchair with a paralyzed face and suddenly like this like precious moment is like ruined in my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed that everybody's like pretending Catherine is like normal. And I'm having like all these just horrible thoughts just swimming. And they lasted about 3 seconds. So I'm staring at the screen and I'm like, I'm so filled with shame by this. Oh my gosh, like, whoa. And then I'm like, wait, okay, this is my 40th birthday. Like, I'm a profound miracle of God. That now 18-year-old is thriving and going to college. That baby, who's now 7 years old at the time, wasn't in the picture. That husband has stayed in our marriage for 21 years. Like, this picture of this 40th birthday party is a profound miracle of God. Like, this right here is like a slow motion miracle in action. Don't I have eyes to see it that way? And I recognized a deep truth that I desperately long for each of you to remember in your life. And it's this: you get to decide how you feel about your story. No one else gets to decide that for you. A lot happens to us in life, doesn't it, ladies? A lot of really hard things, painful things. But ultimately, we get to decide how we feel about those things. A lot is decided for us, a whole lot. But then at the end of the day, we get to say, I get to choose how to think about that. How to feel about that, how to remember that, how to narrate that to my family, that is all decidedly up to me. And I think it's pretty crazy to think how that kind of flips the script. That changes everything. And what if I decide, like, I love my story? What if I decide I love my life? What if I decide that this is the exact story that God has for me? You know, back to the what if game I told you about earlier that's really haunted me. I've had the thought recently, what if this is what God had for my life all along? What if this is the plan? What if this is the purpose? And what if there's just deep joy there? Like, what if? Could it be? And I think the answer is, of course, yes. There is just tremendous joy in stepping into the reality of what God has for us. Now, throughout my ordeal, I have clung to a verse I have loved for many years. And this slide deck was created long before this book was in the world, but this book bears the title of this verse I'm about to share with you. I love the truth of Isaiah 45:3, some of you may know it. It says, I will give you hidden treasure in the darkness, riches stored in secret places, so that you may know that I am God, the God of Israel, the God who summons us by name. And the way I see it, like at various points in all of our lives, we go through the ringer. We go through the deep darkness in each one of our stories. And when we're in the darkness, we might as well get the treasure, you know? We might as well learn the right lessons. We have paid enough, you know? I don't know about you, but, and Bobby, where are you? This is a word I said to you earlier. My pain has been too precious to waste. I imagine yours has too. So we might as well wake up to that and live that way. And it starts by picking up the treasure, clinging to it, and letting it inform the way we live the rest of our lives, honestly. Now, what I am about to tell you is, I think, some of the primary treasure that's come after the stroke, and that's this. I made up a word. The English language was deficient, so I needed a word that was like bittersweet, but so much more. And so the word is good hard. We are all living the good hard life. Life is not one note. It's not just good or just hard. Those are not mutually exclusive. I believe they coexist. And I've really done a deep dive into what even is goodness. What is good? What does the word good actually mean? And you may know the passage, Psalm 84:11, that no good thing does he withhold those walking uprightly with him. And I don't know about you, but that can be a bit perplexing, because I see a whole lot of people, myself included, that are seemingly walking uprightly with the Lord, and yet their lives are ravaged with terrible pain or suffering. How do you reconcile that? Well, as I have done somewhat of a deep dive into it, I found a theologian from the 1600s named Sir Richard Baker, and this notion has changed my life. Please take this home with you all. He writes that the good things of God, the truly good things of God, are not physical. That the truly good things of God are peace of conscience. Yes, take pictures, go on, love it. Yeah, okay, I'll go slow. Yes, I know it's a good one. You need this, you need that. Yes, yes, you need this in your life. The good things of God are chiefly peace of conscience, joy in the Holy Spirit, the fruition of his presence in this life, and the assurance of his face in the next. Of these things, we can know God will never withhold, because they are nothing that this physical world could ever touch. The truly good gifts of God are already inside of us when we know Jesus. And that is a game changer. And yeah, are you clapping? That's right. That's it. Love it. Now, that can feel pretty amazing tonight to some of you. Maybe others it doesn't feel amazing. But knowing that the good things of God are in our stories is like, yes, awesome, yeah, Jesus. And then in a few months, when something bad, really bad happens, you may not feel like the good things of God are all you need to get through, because it feels terrible. So ladies and gentlemen, tell me, I think what, I'm going to stay right here for safety. We have to put our hands on our hips, and we have to tell our own soul some things. We have to get bossy with our own soul. I believe it's the truth of Psalm 42:5, where the psalmist writes, "Why are you downcast, O my soul? Why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I will again praise him, my rock and my salvation." And we see the psalmist essentially like get the soul back on board and said, no, I'm sorry. We are hoping in God. Go the other way. And I think that's what we have to do. Is say, it's almost like pre-decide, like I'm going to hope in God even when it's really hard, because I know that the good things of God can never be taken away from me. And I think that changes things. You know, I've now, and where's Heidi? Sweet Heidi talking about Henrietta. Oh gosh, Henrietta is just a precious part of my life. And I got to talk with her a whole lot about everything I'm telling you tonight before she passed away. And what you do not know, Heidi, I doubt, or maybe you are in touch and know that Henrietta's father is going to be on our pastoral team at camp this summer. So Ben is coming back to Hope Hills Camp and serving families in the pastoral role. It's just too stunning for words. And I say that because I have seen so much of my healing, and no doubt Ben's healing, has been being within a community of people who get it. And shortly after my stroke, one of the things that, and I should say, after the stroke and becoming a person who lives with profound disabilities, I just dipped my toe into the disability pond, started ministering a bit to other people with disabilities. And I recognized that there is so much profound loneliness, just isolation. And I realized that what is most personal in my story, that's actually the most universal to every story. It's not just me. It's not just somebody else with disabilities. It's all of us human beings. So my husband and I founded Hope Hills Camp, which many in this room have volunteered at. So awesome, and many more of you should volunteer. We're taking applications for weeks 1, 3, and 4 right now. The other ones are sold out, come next year. You get to pay money to serve people with disabilities in Alabama in the summertime, and it is a game changer. You will never be the same. I'm not kidding. It is otherworldly and a deep gift. And yet there is, and there's something. When you gather people who are living on the edge, who are burying children, who are from amputees to spina bifida to anything and everything in between, and you put them all together, it is electrifying. It's like take your, if you've been, you know. It's like, oh, this is the realest real. Everybody's just glad to be in the room. Nobody's saying, so what wonderful college is your 18-year-old going to? Instead, do you know what they're saying? Will your child live to their 19th birthday? Will your 18-year-old be alive in a year? It's just, it's a reframe of everything. And it's stunning. And this electrifying thing that's at work, we've really just wrestled with what is it? What is it? Is it just God's presence? Well, yes. Is it the don't wait to celebrate? Well, yes. And 10,000 others. And is it fabulous and beautiful? Yes. But we think what it is this, that our campers, and thus all our volunteers and everyone in that space, is disrupting the lie, the idol, the myth, that joy can only come in a pain-free life. That's what we're doing. Yay! Yay! That's right! Love it! Because the reality is, life is full of pain. There can still be joy. Why does it have to be one or the other? They coexist so beautifully. I like to tell our campers that they get to be joy rebels, to rebel against all the sadness and darkness, but rebel with joy. It is subversive. I love that you use that word, Heidi. I believe it is a subversive way of Jesus to respond to deep darkness with an electric joy. And it's crazy. If you want to go to the next few slides, Susie, that's our dance party. Does it look really sad to you? Next. Oh, suffering, pain, tragedy. Next, oh, just the, cry me a river. I'm kind of in a spicy mood, aren't I? Cry me a river. Okay, wait, go back to the last one really quick. I have to tell about Katie. So camper Katie, precious Katie, I deeply love her. She fell off the back of a wheelchair as an 18-year-old, was headed to play volleyball at Furman, fell off the back of a golf cart, hit her head, and as a result, lives her life in a wheelchair and has extreme cognitive damage. Katie, as a 21-year-old, was aging out of the systems in the state of Alabama. So when you age out, you go from being able to go to school to now basically being relegated to home. And so many with disabilities are not able to earn a livable wage or any wage at all. They're unemployed or underemployed. And their peer group shrinks to being largely paid caregivers or aging parents. I mean, it's like a crisis. And my husband and I recognize, like, there's been this dramatic tear in the human fabric. And our call as believers is to mend those tears, is to mend our broken world. And we recognize that if we were to open a coffee shop and employ people with disabilities to work and create community and universal accessibility, we could begin to change it. And so we did. Jay and I launched Mend Coffee in Buckhead in Atlanta, please come, 2 years ago. And it has just been a profound joy. It is unlike anything you've ever experienced. You gotta come. It's people of all abilities. I can't look at the pictures without crying. It's people of all abilities just doing life together and working and pitching in. And if you want to go to the next one, oh, and it is quite beautiful because we believe beauty and excellence dignify. And we want to dignify and uplift people with disabilities and not relegate them to the most sterile, ugly situation. No, they deserve the best. And we bring the best. That's an adult changing table. I know some of you actually know Mead and Mary Elizabeth Stone. They're some of our best friends. And their son, John, needed an adult changing table. And he passed before we opened. But this is John's John in his honor for life. And this next picture, that's Bentley Grace. She is our greeter. And she sits at the door and greets. And she is paid the same wage as our barista, which is very special and dignifying. And it's a joy to get to enter in stories like Bentley Grace's. You know, I am a huge believer in, okay, well, first of all, I should tell you, once, do you know how this feels like? Once you see, you can't ever unsee. Like, I can't pretend I don't now know about this amazing population. And part of my brain says, if you are more fortunate in any way than anyone else, you need to spend your life building a bigger table and telling people like Bentley Grace and other marginalized people, you can come sit with me. You have a place here. You belong. And so that combination has kind of like wrecked me and just made me who I am. I think the breaking of my heart began the making of my heart to see so much of people who just need like generous love, and I have capacity for it. And the reality is so do you, honestly, because we as human beings all do. We open our eyes to taking care of each other. And I like to tell our friends at Mend, our friends at camp, and anyone who will listen, suffering souls is a pretty universal thing, you may know. And what if we reframed it a little to say a suffering soul gets to be a living survival guide? Because that's what I get to do. I get to be a living survival guide. I get to show somebody coming after me how to do this. I like to say that the trail I am blazing through my wilderness is illuminating the way for someone else through theirs. And you think in the moment like, well, does that even really matter? I don't know that girl and I want my old life back. And then you start to live it out and you're like, this is the most fabulous thing I've ever felt. Being able to speak into people coming after you on your journey is so soul-filling. It's the beautiful truth of 2 Corinthians 1, that he comforts us with the comfort that we have received so we can comfort others. It's this filling, fueling cycle, and I'm totally obsessed with it. Is this next slide? I think this is, I don't want to go out of order. I think what we also get to do, friends, is cultivate ridiculous gratitude for what remains in the story. You know, so much was taken away as a 26-year-old girl. And now, as a 44-year-old lady still doing this, I can still say it's a lot that's been taken away. And it is still sad. And you can attest, Susie cried 10 times a day. And laugh even more than that, though. It's both. And yet there is, like, sadness. But I think perhaps one of the ways I have coped in all of the sadness is to find such gratitude in what is still in this story. There's so much good in this story. Yay, thank you. Donna.
There is collateral damage. There has been tremendous collateral damage from this, really bad.
But what nobody is brave enough to talk about, so I'll go first, there's also collateral blessings. Yeah, there, I said it out loud. There is profound collateral blessing, collateral gifts, even in the worst darkness, because what remains in our broken stories is some really amazing stuff if we have eyes to see it that way. So I'm screaming it out. Yeah, there's major damage, but there's also been profound gifts. And I'm not missing those, because as we talked about with Isaiah 45:3, our pain is too precious to waste. We need the treasure. Okay, one more thought for you. I deeply love the truth of Galatians 4:5 in the Message translation, and I want to read it for you all. This is gold. Everybody, make a careful exploration of who you are and the work that you've been given, and sink yourself into that. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. Each of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life. Oh, doesn't that just give you chills? So I love the thought that, one, we have to take responsibility for our own story. And two, we have to get creative on how to live it out. You know, I want to empower you to take responsibility for your story, because the truth is, if you know Jesus, you do have capacity. He will supply all of your needs. You're good. You got this. You can do it. No one wants to say that in this day and age, but you're gonna be okay. You can do really hard things. He's in it with you. You can sustain. You can press on. You can do harder things than you ever thought you could. His divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness, according to him who calls us by his own glory and goodness. That's 1 Peter 5:10. We can do the hard things. And while we are doing the hard things, we can get creative on how to do them really well. You know, I didn't just wake up one morning and say, like, oh, so everybody has an invisible wheelchair. And, oh, I'm not wheelchair bound, I'm wheelchair free. It's like I got creative in thinking about, what does this mean in my story? How do I live this really well? And we all have the opportunity to look at something and then redefine how we think about it. I think it has to do with the upside down kingdom a whole lot. And I thought recently that maybe we have to step into the upside down kingdom to see things as they really are. And that is really, really cool, because I don't walk very well. So the whole notion of stepping into the upside down kingdom feels very on brand. Anyway, now my family is carrying on. We are four and mighty in some ways. We live in Atlanta, Georgia. And yeah, that's our Christmas card from 2 years ago. And for a second, that could make me sad, just like the 40s birthday picture did. And yet I look a little longer and I recognize, my word, this is a profound miracle of God. Whoa, I cannot believe I get to show up for this story. And as
My husband and I have really thought about the impact this all has had and will have on our children. You know, I have been petrified that all of this is just like this horrible curse on my children, that they are so worse off because of my disabilities, the stroke, our family story. Like, this is just such a curse. And then I woke up to the reality that not only is this not a curse, this is actually an inheritance of breathtaking value, because the stroke, all the disabilities, are teaching my children in ways I never could with words. This is a profound gift to their lives. Jay and I have thought so much about how do we begin to speak to our children in the way we would have wanted to be equipped before we walked through this. Because most of us grew up as believers. I mean, we were both church rats and loved it, and yet it could have gone a lot of ways. So what can we instill in our little boys? And we've landed on this, and we say it to them all the time. We say, James and John Wolfe, God made you to do the hard thing in the good story he's writing in your life. And we realized, oh, we're actually saying that to our own heads and hearts. We're saying, Catherine, God made you to do the good thing. Sorry, God made you to do the hard thing in the good story being written in your life. And Jay says it to him, his own heart too. And we recognize, like, ultimately, you can do hard things, little boys and little Catherine and little Jay. You can do really hard things. And guess what? It's a good story God's writing. Somehow all things are working together for the good of those who love him. I don't understand it completely, but I know it to be true, that somehow I can do very hard things because God has given me capacity for them. And now we are wanting to equip our children to know that, we want them to be mature and complete and lacking nothing. But what does that mean? That means they're going to need to learn to persevere through really hard things. And while I'm teaching them this, I am saying it to my own head and my own heart. And I pray it takes a TBD. I mean, my kids can be train wrecks, and I don't know. So just being real with you, TBD, 100%. But in theory, this will pay off one day. Anyway, I know this wasn't exactly a TED Talk, and sorry, but I hope that my weird, casual, theatrical thing doesn't prevent you from recognizing that you may be at a different place in your journey, where there is straight up sadness and loss and not the ability to add in some humor, and it doesn't feel so good. And I always want to be so aware in every room that I share in that we're all at different places on the spectrum of fresh suffering or suffering from a while ago, and it's all hard, and there's room for it all. There's room for a full-on nervous breakdown because of what's happening. I think that's completely allowed, and yet I think the Lord is here for it, here for all the scream cries because our hearts have been broken. But he's also here for all of the joys. And don't miss that, all the amazing ways that God has not forgotten you. You know, I'm going to close with this thought. As some of you know from our camp, and others will hear this summer from camp, and maybe many of you if you come, that we sing a song the final night of camp. Some of our best friends sing it, actually. They sing this song called You Were Meant to Be Here. It's this gorgeous song. Look it up. I think it's Simpatico is the name of the CD. Do the cool kids say CD these days? Can't keep up. Anyway, I want to close by telling every one of you that you were meant to be here. And I mean that twofold, just like I do at camp. One, you were meant to be in this room right now, tonight. You were meant to be here. But two, you were meant to be here on this earth right now. You know, I've dealt with a lot of feelings of shame and guilt and survivor's guilt that I'm here, that other people have died. I mean, it's been rough. I've felt all the sadness of, should I even have lived? And awful. And I think the Lord really delivered me to a place to say, if you were supposed to have died, you would have died, and you did not die. You have breath in your lungs, Catherine. Wake up. You are supposed to be here. You were meant to be here right now. And that's really, yay, the Lord. And I want to say that to every one of you. You were meant to be here. And don't waste it. Don't waste all the good or all the hard in your stories. I'd love to pray to close or to close my time, more prayer later. Awesome. Cool. I want to pray for you all to have perseverance in your stories, in your lives. Dear Father, I lift up these amazing people, largely women plus Tommy, in Richmond, Virginia tonight, Lord. I thank you that you are at work in our stories. You are on the move. You have never left the room. You will never abandon us, Jesus. We praise you. I thank you for how you are at work in every woman's life and man's in this room, and how you are going to carry us when we can't even walk. Lord, I pray for perseverance, Father. I pray that every person recognizes their capacity to do incredibly hard things, because you are the example, and you've done the hard things, Jesus. We praise you that we can look to you, fix our gaze upon you, Jesus. It's in your name I pray. Amen. Thank y'all so much. The crying income. Oh. Oh, you're so welcome. And so sweet.
I love the John John.
Oh, it's John John. Oh, I forgot you lived with Mary Elizabeth in college. The connections. It's nuts.
Catherine, we have a few questions.
Sure.
I'd love to hear your perspective on. So these are questions that we have pulled. For those of us sitting in a place we never would have chosen, where healing hasn't come in the way we've hoped, how have you learned to still show up in the mornings or in those moments where those thoughts bombard? Do you have a strategy or tool to show up and to?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that. After the emergency mode of the stroke and that long period of beginning to accept, I think I was so carried by other Christ followers that I almost borrowed their strength. It was almost a transfer of courage from others, is the honest truth. Is I think that's what we do in the body of Christ. We are healed by uplifting each other. And I think that was a huge part of it for me. I think also all the feelings of hope failed me big time. They all failed. But the habit of hope carried me all the way through and still does. Is I live with the practice of hope. And hope feeds hope that I don't know if that answers the question of how do you show up, though, does it?
Practicing the habit of hope.
Yeah.
If someone here feels like their story has been reduced to loss or limitation or survival, How have you reclaimed your identity and purpose in the midst of that brokenness? Was there a before and an after?
That's a really good question, too. Okay, you got to ask me one more time, and I'm just going to say whatever comes out.
In the midst of your story, right, that been reduced, or at the time you felt like it was reduced to loss or limitation.
Yeah.
Who you were as a 26-year-old Catherine, or the day before.
Right.
Who you are now.
Yeah.
How did you reclaim that identity?
You know, I don't know if I ever reclaimed my old identity, because I woke up to the reality that God was doing a new thing. And I think at some point I crossed over to now loving who I've become, because I've become more like Jesus. And if you love who you've become, you don't long to go back anymore, because you recognize what built you to become. And it was the suffering. You know, I think suffering forms new people, but Jesus in our suffering forms new creations. And those creations can be glorious. And I don't know, I don't wish to go back to my old life anymore. I had a great life, and yet I love my life so much now, I don't miss the old life anymore. That's the honest answer that just came out. Yes. I don't know if that made any sense.
He makes all things new.
What now?
He makes all things new.
Yeah, absolutely. Isaiah 43:19. See, I'm making something new. A path. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the desert.
Yes, amen. What advice would you give to a friend of someone who is suffering or dealing with tragedy and grief, and how to love them and help steward their pain?
Yes, I definitely have thoughts about this one. Close your mouth. Yeah. Now is not the moment for your words of wisdom, for the scripture you want to share that's probably out of context. Nope, not the moment. I like to say less words are the best words. Like, just be present. There is a beautiful ministry of tears, and that should be given before the ministry of truth.
Oh, that's beautiful. Lastly, what would you say to someone who honestly can't see anything redeeming in their pain right now?
Well, of course, what I would say is hold on. Hold on. You know, Jay, my husband, wrote at the end of Hope Heals some lines that have just forever marked me, and I'm probably going to botch it, but Jay writes, one day we will trace the lines of our scars and see them to have fallen in the most pleasant of places. And it's just taken my breath away every time I just see this image of we're tracing these scars, and so horrible. And then one day we realize that it's this beautiful boundary lines. I'm sorry, I'm always bawling. That's beautiful, though.
It is.
That's Jerry Wolf, not Catherine Wolf.
Well, thank you, Catherine, for spending your time and your wisdom and just stewarding your pain well so that we can go forth and do the same in ours.
Oh, thank you, Anne. It's been a joy to be here. Oh, thank God, it's been a joy. Oh, y'all are so wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I stay or go? Or I go off? Oh, gosh. Sit down. Glory to God, not to me. No. Sit down. Wait, are we done now? What's happening? Oh, lost the straw. Oh, well. Okay. Bye, y'all. See ya. Whoa.